Well, good evening, everyone, everywhere. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Coast, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Coast organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8, Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our ATIP operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net controls for this session are KY6D, Mr. Gordon, from Central Florida or Southern Florida, whichever, and Gary, KC2RMO, from Syracuse, New York. My name is Kathy, and I'm merely opening up the session this evening. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. I'm located in Vero Beach, Florida, where it's currently a temperature of about 75. Very beautiful day, a few storms. Tomorrow it's going to be a high of 85, so it's warming up, but a very beautiful day here in South Florida. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, we ask you to come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, I'm very happy with that. But how about anybody celebrating a birthday last week or this upcoming week that would like to come aboard this evening? We haven't had any birthday stations in a long time. So let's see if we have any stations this evening that are celebrating their birthday. Guess not. One of these days, we'll hopefully find someone. And I think actually in the month of May, you actually will have one. But you know, this is the TIN Open Forum. This is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Our program this evening is about antennas, coaxes, and efficiency. And like I said, Gordon KY6V and Gary KC2RMO will be running this session. I want to advise all stations connected that the net might be recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be part of that recording. So with that, once again, I welcome everyone this evening to the TIN, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. But at this point, Gordon, I'm going to throw it to your direction so you can begin the program this evening. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Over to KY6D. The gavel's all yours.
Well, thank you, Kathy, pretty lady. Good evening, everybody. Gordon here, KY6V. Kathy's already mentioned that we're going to be talking about antennas, coax, feed lines included if they're open wire lines and so on, and efficiency this evening. And I'm very happy to share the chair here with my compatriot up there in Syracuse. That's Gary KC2RMO. And the way we're going to handle this is we have broken the agenda this evening into several segments. And I'll take one segment and then open it up for any comments or questions. Or anybody wanting just to say hello and you're listening. And then Gary will pick up the next section and then I'll pick up the one after that and we'll just beep-bop through this and have some fun. I will say that the material presented tonight is very basic, but it includes a lot of information that one should know when they start playing with antennas and coaxes and that kind of thing. And if you know that, your job is going to be a lot easier in anything that you decide to put together. So let me buy a nickel here and we'll get started. KY6V for South Cars. Okay, we're going to open up with antennas in general. And if all things are working as they should, i.e., you know, transmitter, the feed lines, etc., the antenna becomes the most important item for your station. This is where we separate the men from the boys, and said differently, everything is downhill from the antenna as to the matter of importance. Think about that. I had a general manager at a TV station that came on the air, and one of his general manager broadcast and said that almost identically. The antenna is the single device from which your transmitter energy leaves and where the remote incoming energy enters. Antennas come in all kinds of shape and sizes. There are those that are designed for point-to-point communication, and there are those that are designed for general coverage applications. An antenna reaches its maximum efficiency when its physical length is equal to its electrical length in wavelengths or specific portions of a wavelength. There are two formulas available to determine this ideal condition. There is a distinct difference, I might add, between those formulas, and one should be used and when they should not be used. Let me buy another nickel. The difference in formulas is dependent on the task at hand. One takes in consideration the real world and factors in the effect that the Earth has on the antenna, and the other calculates what should exist without the influence of Earth, that is, in free space. It should be mentioned at this point that the shortest antenna in wavelength that will operate effectively for both transmit and receive conditions is the half-wave antenna, 0.5 of a full wave. Quarter-wave antennas have been made to operate rather effectively, but a good ground plane is needed to function, and the ground plane simply takes up the other missing quarter wave in the equation. The two formulas are, you don't have to write these down, but you can look them up when you need them, 492 divided by the frequency in megacycles equals a half wave in free space. 468 divided by frequency in megacycles is a half wave with Earth effects. The 468 formula should be used when determining the physical length of the antenna. The 492 formula should be used when determining items other than the antenna, and that would be including such things as coax length. So I'm going to stop right here. Gary's going to pick it up momentarily here and talk about the half-wave antenna, a very popular antenna. But I'd like to see if there's any questions. Anybody wants to come aboard and say hello? We'd love to have you. Suffixes only, and call now, please. KY6V for South Cars.
Well, I know I'm going to be up next, but I'd like to check in and make a few comments on things so far. So this is RMO.
Hello, Mr. Syracuse. Right on, Tiger. Anybody else besides RMO, please?
Name, Charlie Bravo. Victor Hotel.
Okay. We've got LCB, we've got Victor Hotel, we've got RMO on the top. Anybody else, please? Okay, let's roll it. Gary, you get it started. Let's have some fun. RMO, LCB, and Victor Hotel stand by. Go ahead, Gary.
Well, thank you, sir. And it is great to be doing this thing with you tonight. That's for starters. This is one of my favorite topics. I'm an antenna junkie. I'll admit it. I spend an awful lot of time researching antennas and looking at what's going to work and what's not going to work here, and just kind of coming up with the with just the best ideas that will work or disproving things anyway. But I think the main thing is that if you take away anything from what we're going to be talking about tonight, that would simply be to understand some of the basics that we're going to present here, but also to not lose the sense of adventure that comes with antennas. I think maybe it's the best frontier in ham radio for experimentation. I have so often seen designs that theoretically shouldn't work, you know, and all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, people resonating beer cans. You know, I mean, it can be done, and it's a great thing to experiment with. I was going to talk a little bit later on about a project that I've got going on that I'm kind of excited about too, antenna wise. But I'm not gonna be a mic hog here tonight. But it's just great to be along with you, and it's great to be doing this particular TIN. It's a great topic, and I think we are going to have some fun. So with that, we'll go back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Okay, thanks for that, Gary. KY6V here for South Cars. You know, it's strange. I was thinking just the other day, you know, I've been hamming for an awful long time. And I've probably done just about everything that you can do in ham radio. But I have never lost my enthusiasm for antennas. It just seems to be paramount. You know, I think there's something embedded in us when we first get our ticket that we want to have the best sounding signal, the loudest sounding signal, and nothing less than 25 over 9 when we get a signal report. And this drives us to antenna experimentation and all the fun that comes with it. Thanks, Gary. Mr. LCB, the mayor of Orange City, come aboard, please.
Well, good evening, KY6B. I'm KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo. Well, what can I say, Gordon? You know, interesting subject tonight, and, you know, I do like to play. But, you know, I think, you know, and I'm quite sure we'll get into it later, but I think, you know, the first thing is just figure out, you know, where you want to play at on the band. You know, and then once you decide what band you want to play on, then go for it, you know, and experiment with every antenna that's going to help you out in that particular frequency that you want to play at there. And once you learn to experiment with a different type of antennas that are going to give you the optimum reach out and touch someone, you know, then move on to somewhere else. So, and I'm quite sure tonight you're going to explain how to get to where you're going to go. If you don't know where you're going, you might not get there. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Thanks for that, George. KY6V here for South Cars. Well, we're hopefully going to cover a lot of the items that you just mentioned. You know, planning is a big thing. It's not only rationalizing what you have available to you in space in your property as to what you can put up, but what frequency you're going to be operating on, what type of coax you really should be using for an efficient transfer. And whether you're talking about point-to-point or omnidirectional activity. And it goes on and on and on. So thank you for that, George. Mr. Louisiana, good evening, Steve. Thanks for being there. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, Gordon. Hello, everybody on board tonight. Well, Gary has piqued my interest already. I have never heard of radiating from beer cans. Of course, my question is, for resonance tuning, do you have to drink the contents of the cans? At some point tonight, Gary, I'd like to know more about how you tune up that antenna. I recently have had the wonder experience with my son, who is just getting into HF, and he was on the track for, well, you got to have the super tower and the super antennas and all that, and I asked him while he was putting all that equipment together, a wire dipole, and convinced him that he could do it with some leftover barbed wire. I think it was barbed wire or electric fence wire. And he did it and put up a dipole sloper that went from maybe 25 feet down to 15 feet, and he was amazed at what he could work. And then he decided he wanted to change bands, so he took that antenna and essentially soldered on some tails to change the band. And I'm just glad that he had the experience of building an antenna, and it must have taken, because now he got himself a roll of copper weld and has built himself a multi-band dipole. So I was afraid he was going to go all commercial, but I think the build your own is has bit. Back to you, Gordon. This is KF5VH.
There's so much fun, as you say, Steve, and building your own and having it work and having fun with it. It just builds the whole hobby for me. My father and I, when I still had water behind the ears, helped me build a four-element 10-meter beam. And this was back in the time when the sunspot cycles were just roaring. And he, being an old ham and very wise in a lot of things, talked me into making the driven element a cape, as opposed to a hunk of aluminum. They gave me broadband coverage from 28,000 to 28.9, something like that, maybe even closer to 30. And just the fun and the joy that I have had with that was something. Hey, let me tell you guys, now I remember the beer can verticals that came out in the 40s or 50s, something like that, where you soldered beer cans one on top of another to form a vertical antenna. I was too young to drink the beverages, but hey, they worked. You could get them up to 32 feet and have a quarter wave on 40. I'll tell you what. Gary, you're up next in line, the half wave antennas. KY6V, over.
Hey, thank you, Gordon. That's exactly what I was talking about to Steve. I could not find the actual article, you know, the reprint of the article. I saw something like this in an old reprint from a QST from, and I think this was like in the 50s, but Gordon's saying, you know, even the 40s, but it can be done, and unfortunately, the terrible price that you have to pay for that is that you do have to drink the beer, okay? Yeah, you just have to, you know, you have to bite the bullet and open up those cans and get them nice and dry so you can solder them. But we, as we continue our talks about antennas tonight, without a doubt, the half-wave antenna is one of the big ones. It's obviously one of the favorites for operators. It's simple to construct, basically omnidirectional. It's efficient and normally one of choice when it comes to the lower frequencies. Now, this comment on lower frequencies, let's say 40 and down, is due to the hardship of constructing a beam antenna at those frequencies. That ain't an easy task. The antenna consists of two wires equal to a quarter wave each, which are connected together in the center with an insulator. Insulators are attached to each remaining end. The outboard side of these insulators are used for support lines to keep the antenna tight. The antenna works rather well in any configuration. However, horizontal to the ground is the most effective. Let me just buy a nickel. When hung, the antenna optimally should reside at least a half wave above ground. The center impedance of this antenna is 75 ohms. Now, a 75-ohm coax long enough to reach from your radio to the center insulator should be utilized. The shield of the coax is soldered to One side of the insulator would be its associated quarter wave and the center conductor of the coax soldered to the other side of the insulator. Obviously, the opposite end of the coax will need an RF connector compatible to your radio needs. That's the ubiquitous half-wave antenna, and it serves us well. So having talked about that for a little bit, let's talk about anything else that's on your mind and have you check in. So we'll take some check-ins right now as we continue on the South Cars TIN. I'm KC2RMO, looking to hear from you. Okay, any check-ins at this time?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on your last, Gary, Six Vic.
By all means, go right ahead, sir.
You know, you hit on a very important point, that the center part, the center feed impedance of a half-wave dipole is 75 ohms. And some people sit back and they say, now, wait a minute, my radio is 50 ohms. I should be feeding that with 50-ohm coax. But the center impedance definitely is 75 on a half-wave. And it doesn't produce much problems if you feed it with a 50-ohm line, but you're about 1.5 to 1 instead of 1 to 1 on your reflected power. And the way that I've always done that is I have my tuner coming right aft of the transceiver. So I may have a 75-ohm coax coming in for that half-wave dipole, and I let the tuner take care of that 1.5 to 1 so that the meters say 1 to 1. Makes me happy anyway, Gary. KY6V, over.
Well, that is correct. Makes me happy, too. I'll tell you, generally speaking, I always run the tuner aft of the transceiver myself. The only time that I've seen, or where it's advantageous anyway, to have that antenna tuner at the feed point is when you're running a vertical. Now you, there may be folks that may have some input on that, but that seems to me to be the accepted best practice with a vertical if you can do it, because those feed point tuners are a little bit on the high side, although I suppose you could put one in a weatherproof enclosure and, you know, remote the thing. It's a lot of work, but it could be done there, but you do gain a little bit of an advantage there. But let me ask you, Gordon, since I've got you right there, what I always do when I install an antenna is I will wrap about a 6-inch diameter. I'll make an air coil balun, and I'll do about basically 19 feet of coax wrapped in a 6-inch circle at the antenna feed point to keep standing waves off the line. That's standard practice for me, and that's worked out pretty well. What do you think about that? KC2RMO, back to KY6V.
Well, Gary, KY6V here. You know, that serves its purpose. It transforms your antenna from an unbalanced antenna to a balanced once you have implanted the balun, okay? It does a number of things for you. It keeps RF off of the feed line, the coax. It reduces problems of TVI and BCI and things of that nature. I can honestly say to you, I've gone both ways many times in the years, and either one worked fine for me. Over.
I started out, I read somewhere, you know, this was a while ago, and the very first article I'd read said, you know, be sure to do this, and I kind of stuck with it ever since. And it's, you know, I've never had any problems with standing waves. Whenever I have an antenna that requires a tuner or is tunable, I guess you should say, never had any issues with that. I've always had an LDG tuner that I kind of swear by. I sold the one and I got another one back for this current antenna project. So, but that's always been good. But my mainstay antenna on the HF station is one that requires tuning really just about every time you change frequency, because it's a very narrow bandwidth, very high Q antenna. It's a it's an MFJ 1788 loop, which you know, you talk about the difference. Steve was talking about that little wire antenna, and you know how inexpensive really that is, and they work great. You know, this thing was almost $450. Works pretty good. It sure did its thing for me many times. Let me buy a nickel. And I was in a situation where I had no no room at all to really put up an antenna. This thing worked great for me. Still works great for me. Of course, the ham shack is down, but it works. It has its limitations. And my other little project that's coming up will perhaps counter those limitations too. But they work very well. But I did want to mention two things. Steve has a link for the beer can antenna. So we will we'll check that out. And we have some other things to go along with too as we continue our presentation. One of which is what you're feeding your antenna with. Okay. So we have our half-wave antenna. We got to feed it with something, and you know, Gordon and I were talking about standing waves, and a lot of that has to do with what you're feeding that antenna with too. So to continue our discussion with coax considerations, we'll turn it back to KY6V and Gordon.
Thank you, Gary. Well, before I get into that, I want to tell you that I was thinking about you today, even with all of the other things that we had going back and forth on email. And something I have never tried. Let me plant a seed and see how crazy you are, Gary. If you can build a beer can antenna, why can't you build a collinear loop antenna? And you know, these guys are primarily unit direction, directional. In fact, I used a loop antenna for a 10-meter direction-finding antenna many, many years ago, and that thing just worked beautifully. On one side of the antenna, you could tell exactly where this guy was, and if you turned it around the other side, the signal was so weak, you knew that you had him co-cocked where you were to start with. But imagine this. An imaginary type scenario, I think, is just grand in building antennas. You take your loop, your MFJ loop, $450 a pop, I think I build them myself, stick another loop on top of that and feed it in series. And then another loop on top of that, and another loop on top of that, and another loop on top of that, and have each one of these loops situated about 45 degrees apart from the next one higher. You know, in aiming a capability. You'd either go nuts, Gary, or you'd have a lot of fun. Over.
I think I'd go nuts. I'll tell you something, though. The experience that I've had with that loop has been very good. It really has been very good. It's not what you'd really call a DX antenna, although you can work DX with it. It's just not the sort of antenna that you're going to constantly find yourself, getting into Europe with. However, you never have any problems hitting the West Coast from Syracuse with that thing. So that's been pretty. You know, I'll go and I'll take a look on the PSK, mapping site if I'm doing PSK 31, and I'll see where I'm hitting. And pretty much better than 95% of the time I'm showing up on the West Coast somewhere, and I'd say about 60-70% of the time I'm hitting somewhere in Europe. But I just never felt I'm really strong getting into Europe with it. It does get there, but it doesn't get there on a regular basis. That's why I'm coming up with this vertical idea, but it won't be made of beer cans. Maybe we'll think about that. I don't know. but I do like the collinear thing. I do want to mention, as far as loops, the way that goes too, that there are designs that actually have a loop within a loop, which is basically a tuning stub for the thing. So you don't have to get quite as fine with it as you do in this configuration. This thing is a giant tuning capacitor, and it's a remoted thing, and it you have your meter, and you have this little cross needle meter, and you get it down. You can get that thing down to 1-to-1 though, pretty easily with a little bit of practice. So it's a kind of a remarkable antenna. It does a nice job. This is KC2RMO back to KY6V.
Okay. Well, let me know when you build that collinear. I'd like to know. Reminds me of the VHF commercial antennas. You know, the 2 meter and 440 guys that I call banjo antennas. Or trumpet antennas, maybe. And they take that that half-wave element and they stagger it around 360 degrees to give you the pattern of the antenna that is best for you in your particular location. All right, guys and gals, Gordon here, KY6V for Southcars. We're going to go into coax considerations, my next segment here, and I see that following this, if I can flip the page and take a look at Rooney here, Gary's going to go into SWR, standing wave ratio, and that's a rather involved subject. Some very interesting points will be brought out tonight. I don't know how we did this numbering. I think maybe you should have taken the first one and I get the last one, because that's going to be a long one for you, Gary. Let me buy a nickel here, guys and gals. All right, coax is an interesting identity of its own. It comes with different insulation, such as poly, foam, air, etc. The coax for a given impedance comes in various sizes and diameters, varying from small to as much as 8 inches in diameter, believe it or not. What is important to determine when picking your coax is to determine your expected power level and the operating frequency that you will be using. Now, coax is rated as to its power handling capabilities and also the attenuation at given frequencies. This latter is important, for you would not wish to choose RG58U for use at 440 megahertz, you know, the 440 band, for you would probably find that the RF energy is being attenuated, that's lost, before it gets even to the antenna. This, by the way, works both ways. Received signals are attenuated to the same degree inbound down the coax to your receiver. Let's talk about velocity factor for a moment. The velocity of an RF signal is dependent upon the material to which it is associated and going through. A signal being fed into a coax using poly insulation will have its propagation altered by 34%. Through foam, it'll be 20%, and through air, it'll be about 8%. So the importance of this knowledge and its application will become evident in the following discussion on standing wave ratios, SWR abbreviated. And Gary's going to handle that. So, any comments or questions out there, please? Or just to say hello, come on in now. Suffixes only from KY6V and Southcars.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
And RMO.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Ohio. VXP, RMO, anybody else, please? All right, good evening, Rick. Go right ahead, sir. Don't tell me that winter has arrived back in Ohio. Over.
Well, I could say that probably did day before yesterday, but no. I think spring is here and summer is coming quick. I have to think back when I first got my ticket. My first radio was a Yaesu VX150 handheld. And I had fun with, you know, using a handheld radio, but I did do a sub. It was 25 feet of RG850U cable onto a outdoor, actually it was a Radio Shack VHF UHF scanner antenna. Back then it was like 1995. And I tried, before I used the 58U, I tried some RG8U, or RG8 coax, and found it very uncomfortable trying to work around with a handheld radio on it. So I tried the 58U, 25 feet, put an SWR meter on it, started out with low, medium, and high, which is like half a watt, 1 watt, and 5 watts. And when I got up to the 5 watts, it was roughly about 1.8 to 1 SWR. But when I was down at medium and low, medium was about 1 to 1. And on low, I couldn't even get the meter to even move. So I found that that particular setup worked quite well. I had to use it. Let me drop for a second. You know, I had to use the 25 feet in coax, but I even used it on a dual band radio, UHF, with the same coax setup, and with the idea of using on low power. And I had quite a few contacts, different repeaters, and simplex, where I did find that I was working quite well. So I know it kind of goes against the idea of using RGA 58U on UHF, but maybe the length of it and the power level. I think the power level is the most important part, because I've heard of people that have had trouble with other coax running high power and having high SWR. So lucky for me, VX150 handheld, 25 feet of that coax, and I was getting repeaters at least probably a good 40 to 60 miles away with no problem at all. And one VXP back to net control.
Well, I'm very pleased that it worked out for you. And I think that the crux or the bottom line here was probably the availability and professionalism of the repeater installation to allow you to do that. You know, and I know what you're saying about using a handheld with RG8U. It's very cumbersome. That isn't to say that you could use a little pigtail, not very long, of 58, and then plug it into the coax. It gives you a little more flexibility. But let me say this about that. Coax is normally rated as to dB of attenuation at various frequencies at a length of 100 feet. Okay? RG8U at 2 meters has a loss factor of 3 dB. 3 dB means half power. So if you're putting 50 watts into the antenna, you're only getting 25 watts to the antenna with 100 feet of RG8U. So now you've gone down and sized it down to 25 feet. So you have reduced that 3 dB by half. 58U, and I'm speaking from memory, and I hope I'm not doing this wrong, is about 6 dB of loss per 100 feet. So you could do the math on that and figure out what you were really delivering to the antenna. I take let me buy a nickel here. I take exception to the power level. It power level makes no difference for you to ascertain that correctly. You would have to have an SWR meter at the transmitter output and also one at the antenna input to see what the loss factor is. The way that I normally do that is I just stick a dummy load with a wattmeter on it at the antenna end and measure what I'm getting into the dummy load, which should be 50 ohms to 50 ohms as opposed to what I'm delivering. So I'm having trouble with that, Rick. The fact that it worked out for you is great, but I think something was fooling you, sir. Over.
Well, I was, first I tried on high power, and that's where I kept getting a very high SWR. But it seemed like the lower the power, the less the meter moved. And all reports I got from different repeaters, there were some that are, there were some that were very good set up, but there were some of the weaker repeaters. I was in Hartford, Connecticut, and if you can imagine hitting a repeater all the way down in West Haven, Connecticut, which is about 100 miles away, I was hitting that repeater with no problems. Of course, with propagation times, there was one in New London, Connecticut, that I could hardly ever receive good propagation. I was getting in there with no problem. And I was using low, medium power, which is 1 watt. And they were saying, oh, you're, no problem at all. Most of the, most of the times I was using even low power, getting into a lot of these repeaters. And we had nets where we were running simplex. And I was averaging about, maybe 30 to 40 miles simplex with the antenna set up. And running medium power, which was 1 watt. So it was funny. Most of the times I could get out better than I could receive. That was the only drawback I had with the setup, but as far as simplex. But I don't know. Maybe it was working too good for me, but I enjoyed it. N1TXB back to net control.
Well, you know, if it was working, why, don't worry about it. You know, a lot of these SWR bridges, and Gary, just hold on for me here, RMO, depending on the model that you're using, a lot of them have a set control. In other words, for you to read the proper level of reflected power, you turn on your transmitter and you set the meter to the set position. And then you go over to the reflection and it will give you the proper ratio between the two. Now, not all do that. You know, the Bird wattmeters, as an example, use a slug that you put into the wattmeter that is calibrated for the power level that you will probably be losing, using 5 watts or 25 watts or 100 watts or whatever. So did you have a watt meter that required a set position? Because that can really throw you off, sir. Over.
Yeah, I vaguely remember you had to set it to the forward and reverse setting. And it also gave you the output. And that's where I definitely knew that everything was... I even had it checked out by local candy store, and they said, oh, everything is working fine. So they wouldn't sell the meter unless it was checked out by one of the technicians, and proven to be really good, N1TXB.
Okay. Well, as I say, if it was working, that's all that's really needed. Thank you, sir. Mr. Syracuse, RMO, go ahead. KY6V for South Cars.
Hey, well, thank you, sir. And I, you know, it's funny. I had a situation that was similar in some regards to Rick. Back at the old QTH, I love saying that. Back at the old QTH, I had my VX150 hooked up to a J-pole that I still have. I love that antenna. I will never part with my J-pole. It's a copper pipe J-pole, and that thing is just awesome. And but what I had done was I had I was running RG8 to the J-pole, but I had a little 58 pig going to it, and that worked out pretty well. But I was able to hit the Cortland repeater from here very well. That's about 40 miles from here. And that was no sweat at all for that little setup, and I'd run the full 5 watts into it, but not a problem at all. But the one thing that I wanted to bring up, Gordon, was the old adage, you get what you pay for. And I was for a long time, so concerned with keeping, because ham radio can be a really expensive hobby. It can be also a very inexpensive hobby if you know what to use. For the longest time, I was saying, well, I can always cut some corners on the feed line, and that's not where you want to cut it. there's other ways to save a buck in this hobby, but my leaning now is actually I'm kind of focused on two different things. Let me just buy a nickel. The first is to steer away from coax altogether and look at ladder line for ladder line type antennas. Secondly, if you're going to use coax, I'm looking very hard and fast at the LMR cables. They look to be really good, low loss, and very nicely made, good velocity factor. They've got a lot going for them. That's that times microwave stuff. So any comment on those? What do you think about LMR? KC2 RMO, back to KY6V.
Okay, thanks, Gary. KY6V, South Cars, talking about antennas, coax, and efficiency here tonight. LMR is an excellent cable. In my humble opinion, it's not the top of the line. But it depends on where you're using it. You don't need LMR cable for HF, and I'm talking from 160 up to 30 megacycles, 10 meters. A good RG8U or a good RG213 is more than ample. This attenuation factor just doesn't come into play until you get up around 6 meters and then really into 2 meters and 440. That's where LMR shines. But the step above that is Heliax. And it comes dear, price per foot. But the way you get around that is you pick up used Heliax at the ham conventions that you attend. You pick them up for a great price. And if you're lucky, you get connectors with them, because the connectors for the half inch run $50 a pop, or used to, probably higher now. By the time you get up to 7/8 Heliax, which is super stuff, the price gets really richy. But to answer your question, LMR is good. There was a coax for the VHF and UHF that came out and still is out there called 9913. It's not bad. But it's not an LMR, Gary. Over.
Well, that's good to know. I never run more than 50 feet of anything. I operate primarily HF. I'm pretty much split between 20 and 17. And 40 meters, pretty evenly. So those are those. That's where you're going to find me haunting the airwaves, you know. But that's pretty much it, you know. So probably a 58 is going to be okay, but you know, and I'm you know, hearing it from you, I know it's going to be okay. For an RG8U. But you know, it just if you're going to go and you know, just kind of put the icing on the cake, you know, hey, why not LMR? You know, because you might be able to reuse it if you did want to do a run for a VHF or a UHF type of a thing. Because I still do occasionally work two meters around here, and also six. We've got an awesome 6 meter repeater here that I like to work. So that's always good too. And that's the other thing too. I don't need anything but my handhelds for the local repeaters here, and everything's linked anyway, so it's like, I don't know, it's almost a moot point, but that's good to know. It really is, and I will file that in the savings file. So thank you, sir. KC2RMO back to KY6B.
Yeah, well, I don't recommend going for the LMR pricing unless you're 6 meters and up. Actually, you know, down around 40 and so on, this RG8X is pretty good stuff too, unless you run a lot of power. You don't want to put a 1500 watt amp on RG8U. You just burn the rascal right to pieces. But for a normal 100 watt transceiver, that works fine down there. But don't, by any means, try to use it on 2 meters. It'll just kill you. All right, Professor, I'm going to send it right back to you. The next on the agenda here, and we are 54 minutes into the hour and counting, is SWR, Standing Wave Ratio. And you get the big bucket here tonight, Gary, KY6V. Go ahead.
Oh, indeed I do. Well, you know, this is a great topic because it's one of those things that everybody's got an opinion on, and you know, everybody has very strong feelings about this. If you listen to some folks that have been in this hobby for a long time, they're going to tell you SWR doesn't mean anything. As a matter of fact, people before they invented meters, to measure it, nobody even knew they had it. They didn't think about stuff like that. You'll also hear people that are fanatic about it, and they're ready to scrap their entire setup if the thing is anything above 1-to-1. You know, there's people that just watch that meter dearly. It's an interesting thing, and it can be the bane of many a ham's existence. But what we're talking about here is SWR, standing wave ratio. Ideal conditions are, of course, when conditions exist that allows maximum power transfer to the antenna and maximum radiation is obtained. Okay? Two things. I'm going to read that again. Maximum power transfer to the antenna and maximum radiation is obtained. Now, this is happening when everything is properly matched. That's to say that when all input and output impedances are proper and we have a 1-to-1 transfer. When this condition exists, any length of coax may be used and forward and reverse power may be read accurately at any point on the transmission system. Determining this condition accurately is a horse of a different color. Let me buy a nickel. When the impedance of the transmission line is different than the impedance of the input of the antenna, a mismatch occurs. Dependent on the severity of the mismatch, part or all of the forward power from the transmitter is reflected back to the transmitter from the antenna. This results in a standing wave on the transmission line and is related to the ratio of forward power to that of reflected power. Obviously, this is all related to reduce affectivity, loss of antenna radiation, in blunt words, weaker transmitted signal. By the way, there is a formula for impedance, And let me just buy a nickel, and I'm going to read this out to you. It'd be a little easier if I could write it on a blackboard, but I'm going to read it to you, so stand by. We have the symbol Z, which is a measure of the total opposition to current flow in an alternating current circuit, made up of two components, ohmic resistance and reactance, and usually represented in complex notation as Z equals R plus, these are lowercase, IX, where R is the ohmic resistance, and X is the reactance. So, from a practical standpoint, how do we know that we have a mismatch, or better yet, determine that everything is operating properly? Well, we start by using what's called an SWR bridge. This is a unit that is inserted in series with the transmission line and tells us about the amount of forward power and any reflected power that may exist. It's important to understand how this device works. This meter is normally a voltage sensing device. It uses a pair of diodes, one reading the forward direction and the other reverse direction. It reads the voltage that's sampled at the point and has been inserted in the transmission system. And since the forward and reverse voltages are RF, that's alternating, the sample point may well find itself inserted at either point of a maximum voltage, minimum voltage, or somewhere in between. In other words, it's kind of a catch-as-you-can type of a thing. For example, you have a high reflective coefficient, and not knowing where in the cycle your meter is inserted, you may well read a low reflected power, when in reality your reflected power is high. One heck of a situation to find yourself in, is it not? Let me buy a nickel. Now, that was a lot of stuff to go through, you know, and you kind of, you're probably sitting there saying, what is this guy talking about? But there are only two positions on the SWR meter that will read your antenna system correctly. Now, the first is to insert the meter in the antenna input terminals or at the end of a predetermined length of coax. Placing the meter at the antenna is not always a practical answer, particularly if the antenna is on a 20-foot mast, which is situated at the top of a 200-foot tower. That ain't going to happen. So, there's a lot to that. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and then we're talking about things in your transmission line like velocity factor, and here's where the velocity factor of that coax comes in. I'm just buy a nickel. It is a proven fact that if your coax length is equal to an even multiple of the half-wave frequency that you are testing, the SWR read at the far end of the coax from the antenna will be identical to the SWR read at the antenna. So let's run the math. We'll use 7.2 megahertz and polycoax for the example. 492 divided by 7.2 megahertz equals 60.33 feet. 68.33 feet times 0.66 equals 45.09 feet. 45.09 feet times 2 equals 90.19 feet. Now, please note that we use the formula 492 because we're not dealing with an antenna, and we use 66 as the velocity factor in keeping with the velocity factor of poly. Now, the end result that we can use, 90.19 feet of coax for our readings, or should we choose, we could take it up another and make it the appropriate length at 180.32 feet. Lots more covered on antennas, but that's a good starting point. Okay, that's the triage on on standing waves. Basically, if you ignore the mechanics, if you ignore all the technical stuff that we'd kind of gotten into, it's what's coming back at you. It's how efficient your antenna is how well it behaves matched to your transmitter. And again, as I said before we started, it really, you know, to some folks is a major deal. To others, it's not a big deal at all. So let's take some check-ins right now. Let's hear what you think about it. If your SWR is better than 2-to-1, are you freaking out, or are you one of those people that likes to keep it really nice and close and keep it down to that 1.1, 1.2 range? Let's hear what's happening in your SWR world. Let's take some check-ins right now as we continue. On the TIN, I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Victor Hotel.
Delta Whiskey.
couple that time. We had Victor Hotel and Delta Whiskey. Anybody else this time around? Nope. So we'll go down to Louisiana. And good evening to you, Steve. How are you?
Things are good here in Louisiana. And I hope everyone else is having a nice evening. I was just going to mention that all of the things we've been talking about, for the most part, I think we've associated from transmitter going to the outside world off of our antenna. But I was just going to bring up that all of this stuff also is a factor in the reverse direction. I mean, if you're a little short on your engineering transmitting, you just crank up the amplifier and run an extra 100 watts. But that doesn't happen on the receive side. All of the inefficiencies that you build into your transmission and antenna system aren't as easily compensated on the receive side of the equation. Just a comment, and back to net, KF5VH.
Well, thank you, Steve. And, you know, that's a great point. Number one, you can't work them if you can't hear them. That's for sure. So people do tend to forget, you know, when they enter this antenna discussion, when we start talking about feed line and efficiencies and all that other stuff, it does work in the opposite fashion. I have a very good friend who is a very hardcore shortwave listener, and this guy has, I don't know, 10 receivers, and he's got, the guy actually built a beverage antenna. I mean, and I'm really serious about that. It actually overloaded the front end of one of the receivers, and just, he had to rebuild the whole front end of the thing. It works both ways, and if you're not... If you're not receiving well, you're sure not going to be transmitting well too. But the good point, yeah, you got to. If you have, on the transmitting side of things, well, it's like, wow, I'm losing a little power, so I'll go up 25%. You know, and I guess folks will do that. You know, I've always been a believer in, trying to get it as right as you can right from the get go. You know, so you don't have to do too many compensations, and you can. You can just go ahead and, you know, you don't have to worry too much about that. But you'll also have the confidence of knowing what you're listening to is what's out there, too. You know, you're not going to be missing anything. But a great point. And thanks, Steve. We'll move it along to Delta Whiskey. Hello there, and welcome aboard.
Okay, real good. Yeah, the name here is Dave, and I'm in Saginaw, Michigan anyway. I've been in ham radio for 50 years plus, and... talking about staying away, I guess what my thought is right now, especially with the solid-state transceivers, is the main thing is to keep the transceiver happy. Back when I first got into ham radio and we had the tube-type transceivers, staying away wasn't really, it was important, but it wasn't as important as what it is now. With the tube types, it just basically... we took care of ourselves with tuning, but with the transistor ones, they just really don't like that high standing wave. You get anything over about 2-to-1 standing wave, and you have a problem. I know our club has a Yaesu, and if we run it anywhere over 1.3, 1.4 standing wave, we have problems with the audio, and you get it down to 1.2, 1.3, and the audio is real good. So that's a good thing. And I'd like to mention also, I ran into something here last fall. I set it up over the wintertime here. Once you get it up for the wintertime up here in Michigan, you normally don't mess with antennas a whole lot. And this winter has been one of those, but. I end up with a long wire, actually a wire antenna, and fed it with a 9-to-1 on, and right to ground 145 feet of wire, and I was able to run 160 meters all the way to 10. Actually, it did 2.6 also. Had a tuner, used a tuner on 160 and 80 and 40 meters to run at about 2-to-1. the whole rest of the band, all the way from 40 meters down to 6 meters. It was almost, I think the highest standard wave was about 1.2, 1.3, run that wide way all the way down. Anyway, that's all I have to say, and I'll turn it back to you. This is Dave up in Saginaw, WADW.
Well, Dave, thank you very, very much. And good point there, too. You know, a lot of transceivers nowadays will reduce power or shut down if you're above 2-to-1. And you're right, the old tube rigs were much more forgiving if you had a high SWR. There's no two ways about that. But solid-state finals are more susceptible to damage, and, you know, you have to live with that reality. But, again, I think, too, there's an attitude towards it that nowadays exists that didn't exist back then, and I think... a lot of old timers will tell you that, you know, they never even bothered with it. You know, it's just, you know, I threw the thing on the air and it was fine. You know, it's like I hit Columbia with the thing. You know, so it's great. You know, but you know, that's kind of like too. You start talking about tuners and all. One little project that I've got going here. Let me just buy a nickel. One project that we've got going here, in addition, once I finished rebuilding this this ham shack of mine, the room was gutted, and we're actually rebuilding the room. But I have an antenna, I have an end fed that I'm going to run as a vertical, and want to see where that's going. So I got an LDG tuner for that, and we're going to be doing some playing around with that thing, but I think that's got some great advantage for a limited space type of a thing, where we can run that as a vertical, and you know, eliminate the need for radials. I am going to run some radials off of it, but you know, you have a very small footprint. No radials are required anyway, and you can cover everything from 40 to 6 on this baby with a tuner, so it's got some merit. We're going to give that a try. But we have a couple of comments out there, too, I want to get to. We have LCB, we have Victor Hotel, and 6 Victor, so we'll start with George, and LCB, you have a comment? Let's hear it, sir.
I think that was an old posting, Gary. I think he had to go out and take care of the dogs, over.
Oh, he must be out in the barking lot, then. Okay. All right, we'll move it along to Victor Hotel. Steve, do you have a comment?
That also was from previous round.
Well, that only leaves Gordon. and you're the next segment anyway. So, Gordon, come on aboard.
No, I think we've run out of segments. Thanks, Gary. Gordon here, KY6V. I want to say hi to Dave up there in Saginaw. Very excellent comments, Dave. And as Gary said, you know, most of the transceivers today, not all of them, but most of them, have fold-down circuits. The higher your SWR gets, the further it reduces your power output. And I don't know about the magic of 2.1, depending on where this fold-down circuitry works. But I want to make one comment. It's been my experience through the years working with the two-way guys, Gary, that they have adopted a rule of thumb. When they put in a two-way commercial communication setup in an automobile, if their SWR is at least 1.5 or less, they leave it. They don't even try to go any further. Because you can't tell the difference between a 1.5 to 1. You start getting up to 2, and by the time you get to 3, you can sure tell the difference. So don't fuss with it. Don't lose any sleep if you're reading 1.3 or something. Over.
Well, that is exactly what was told to me... oh, gosh, I'm going to say 5 or 6 years ago, by a fellow at a ham fest. Got to talking to him about that, and that's exactly what he said. You know, you can't tell the difference between 1.5 and 1-to-1. And it's true. So don't sweat it. But I know I have a friend. It's actually KC2RMN. He was the guy that got his license the same day I got mine. And he freaks out. If that thing goes to like 1.3, he's just like, you know, and I'm like, don't worry about it, you know. But he thinks the thing's going to blow up, and I'm like, no, it's okay, you know. But that does, you know, there are people that are just so hyper about it. It's just, it's amazing. But, you know, I was thinking, too, as we were having this discussion of SWR, about you know, all the crazy antennas that are out there, and trying to tune them. I think I was just going down that path of like, you know we've been talking about beer can verticals. My first antenna for HF was two Slinkies. I had two Slinkies as a dipole. They actually worked pretty well, but had them up about 30 feet, running along the eaves of the house where we lived in, and that was not a bad setup at all. But you know, I was it tuned very well. I was always able to get below 2-to-1 on that thing, and really, you know, most times. I think I was in that 1.3 to 1.5 range on it. I don't ever recall having obnoxious SWRs on that thing, but that Slinky was pretty cool. So I guess one thing that maybe I don't know where we want to go with the next segment, maybe we could throw that out. What was the wackiest antenna that you ever tried to work? Maybe we'll get some good stuff with that. KC2RMO, back to KY6V.
Yeah, you keep referring to the next segment, and I think you completed the last one here. But I wanted to mention, if Dave is still with us, and I hope he is, that I've had an awful lot of luck through the years with long wire antennas. N-fed, L-type tuners on the end of it. Started off with about 62 footers, and I could work everything from 40 meters up through 6, actually, 10 meters primarily. And then you get ambitious and you lengthen that antenna out if you've got the property to do it. And you make it 120 feet, now you got 75 feet and up, and get it out to 250 feet, you're 160 and up, and that's a sweet acting antenna. But the longer it gets, Gary, the more directional it becomes. It depends on the number of half waves that are traveling on the length of that antenna. And the more half waves, the more gain you get off the bloomin' end. So if you want to be talking to San Francisco and you're pointed to someplace in the UK, it's just not going to happen. And then, you know, you go to bed at night and you think about, I wonder if I could rotate that thing. Go ahead, Gary, KY6V.
Well, a very wise person that I had talked to about this antenna dilemma of mine, or my urge to go beyond the loop, recommended a 60-foot piece of wire. And this kid that I've got comes with a 30-foot piece, and they say if you want to, you can add on to it. This is from the Honolulu Emergency Amateur Radio Club. They have I'm going to put in a shameless plug for them because they make a great product. Excuse me. And it's very inexpensive. And it's a matchbox type of an antenna. It's just what Gordon was talking about. It's an end-fed with a 9-to-1 Anon in it, and it allows you, with the aid of a tuner, to work everything between 40 and 6. And as I said, I've got the 30-foot, and that's what gave me the idea of running it, this thing as a vertical, because, you know, great small footprint antenna. I found the I got out the property survey for my house, and that stand of trees in back of us. Yes, I do own property into this little woods that's back there, but that was the good news. The bad news was that the tree I wanted to attach it to fell down about 3 years ago, so we're not going to hook up to that one. So we're going to use the vertical. I was playing with taking that and making it as a 60-foot and running it out that way, but I think the vertical idea still stands, so that's going to be good with that. But that's my little experimental thing. So that's about all I've got on this end. And yeah, we don't have any more segments to go to. I don't know, Gordon, do you want to open it up to a general discussion of antennas, illegal aliens, or aliens from outer space, or do we want to say goodnight? I'm not sure. Well, how say you, sir?
Hey, I'll stay here as long as there's a group that wants to participate. I don't know about the aliens things. We might talk about civilization on Mars. There's an awful lot of talk about that here lately. Well, guys and gals, that's our program for tonight. Want to thank everybody that's contributed. I see you're still with us, Dave. Jump right back in anytime you feel that you want to get your feet wet. We'd love to have you. Do we have any other check-ins this evening? Any other subjects that anybody has any questions on? We're not turning this into Ask an Elmer by any means, because that's Gary's show once a month. But we'd be happy to entertain anything but politics and religion. KY6V, net's open. Call now.
VE3MEW.
Hey, Mr. Peterborough, what a pleasure. What are you doing up this late? Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good evening to everybody. This is VE3MEW. What do you mean up late? I'm rarely ever in bed before 11:45. My life has altered a little bit here for timing so that I'm able to get on here now a little bit more often when you have your nets, so I may be here to try and traumatize you a little bit more often. Anyway, you were talking about talking to Columbia. I assume you were talking about British Columbia. Maybe not. Anyway, and as far as your SWR is concerned, I'm running a Yaesu FT950 here, and its full back limit, its SWR and its tuner limit, is 3:1. It comes with a built-in tuner, and if it's anything much over 3:1, it just says, no, we are not going to be nice to you today, sir. So, I did pay some attention to your one segment that Dave was talking about there about the opposite of transmitting, which is receiving. And it's kind of interesting in my situation here that I can perform some experiments which have proved quite interesting and revealing. I have a three-element monobander for 10 meters up at 45 feet or so. And hanging below it and stretched out across the yard and folded back toward the house, I have a off-center fed Buxom Windham antenna for 160 through to 6 meters. And they're both connected to the radio, and I can switch back and forth to each one. And what's interesting to me is that, let's say I'm listening to some station in France on the monobander, and it has a certain signal strength, certain quality of sound as far as noise and whatnot, and I switch over to the wire antenna, all of a sudden the signal goes up. It's higher. It's quieter. But when I'm doing the transmitting, that's where the difference comes. On transmit, my monobander works better to get to France than the other one does. So it's interesting to compare the two as far as their quality of receiving and transmitting is concerned. It's even going to get more interesting. I'll buy a nickel here. To get more interesting come the end of next summer. I got that tower going up on the hill behind me there. I'm buying a beam that a friend of mine lives over the other side of the hill from me. It's a four-element tri-bander. Big, really big. Oh, boy, oh boy. That's really a big beam. I forget the name of it. And he's selling it because he wants one with five elements. He wants to add 40 meters rotatable to his situation over there. But it's going to be interesting for me. When I've seen what he's done on the contests and on contacts around the world and on the pileups and so on, what he can do with that antenna, it's going to be interesting to compare that to my my wire antenna, because I'll suddenly have a beam on a few more bands than what I don't have now. So I'm going to really enjoy looking forward to that. Anyway, nice to be able to chat with you guys again and hear you and have the time to spend here. Looking forward to more of it. So we'll say cheers and back to net. V3MEW, Peterborough.
Well, thanks for that, Bill. KY6V here. I'm thinking about your explanation of getting a better signal on the sloper or the wire antenna as opposed to the beam, and I think it's the angle of radiation, wouldn't you think? You've been around this neck of the woods for a long time. Angle of the dangle? I would assume that your wire antenna is getting a lower angle of radiation maybe than the beam is. What do you think?
Well, you're commenting about something I'm not too sure about now as far as that's concerned. I'm relating it a bit to what you said, in that there's just more wire out there than there is on the beam. I mean, it's a 10-meter beam. Go figure. It's a three-element beam. How much element do you think there is? There's not that much there. And when I think of that little bit of metal in the air, and then I look at the wire and I see how much of it's spread out across the yard from, it's going kitty corner ways from one corner of the yard to the other, and it's longer than the yard. That was interesting when I bought that thing, by the way. I never really comprehended in my mind just how long 236 feet of wire was until I started to stretch it out. And then suddenly it dawned on me, maybe I should have checked the yard for my survey or whatever, but I had to fold the ends back towards the house a little bit. But anyway, it's up. I just think there happens to be more, I think the wire provides more real estate, more capture area for the signal, because it does seem to have a higher signal strength, at least 2 to 3 S units higher on my meter, Gord, the E3MEW.
And that antenna, the wire antenna, is resonant on 10 also? You use it on 10, over?
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. My radio will tune that antenna. It doesn't have to work very hard either. It tunes it all the way from 160 right through to 6 meters, with the exception of the two the work bands. The two work bands, that doesn't like them very well. I can receive on it, but it doesn't want to transmit on there. And I've never tried it on the 10 megahertz section of the band. But on everything else, it tunes real easily, and I have a good SWR profile. Comes up on the screen here on the monitor, and looks good.
Okay. Well, I think that, it might be a combination of both the angle of radiation and the amount of wire, too. You might be getting multiple half waves there when you're tuned to 10 on the wire. Sounds great, Bill. Well, I didn't realize you stayed up till midnight most of the time. 11:45, I think you said. Is that why you drink so much coffee in the morning on the 8 o'clock net? Over.
Well, I have to do what I have to do. I mean, I do spend, I'm not ashamed to admit this, I do spend some time in Middle Earth. I'm trying to help those hobbits get through to Mount Mordor. Try wrapping that around your tongue real quick. Oh, boy. But, there's dragons to slay and orcs to chase across the field and so on, and I have to do my bit, so one of a number of activities here. But anyway, I happen to enjoy that one, and it's a lot of fun, and we just got a recent upgrade. We got to escort the hobbits to Isengard now, and we're going to flood the place and see if we can wipe out some of the bad guys, and oh, boy. It all has to do with Lord of the Rings, and if you're not into it, you wouldn't understand, and if you are, you will, and so what can I say? It's a classic, Gord, in my mind, Gordon. It's fun, so each to his own.
Did you hear all this, Gary? I'm not sure if he should write the book, you should write the book, or I should write the book. Gary, go ahead. See if there's anybody else, and go ahead and close it out. We're 28 minutes into the hour. It's been a good show, Gary. Over.
It has been a great show, Gordon. And, you know, this is the sort of thing that, you know, you could... I personally, I could do one of these nets all night long. Wouldn't faze me. I love stuff like this. And the one thing I did want... First of all, Bill, it's great to hear from you. And I agree with Gordon that, you know, you got a lot of wire there, so you're pulling in a lot of stuff, and probably the angle is such that it's improving it, too. That is one reason why I'm so keen to get this, to get the station back on the air, but also to get this second antenna in play, because I think the takeoff angle of this end-fed used as a vertical is going to be perfect for DX work, and I'm really excited about seeing what we're going to be able to do with that. I think the loop, like I say, is one of the things that a lot of people don't have the option of getting an antenna up as high as you know they would like, and a lot of times, you know, your antenna's at 25 or 30 feet, that's about as good as you're going to do. The beauty of that loop was that you could operate with it at 6 feet, and it still works great. Mine's up about 12. I mean, it still works great. But that takeoff angle, I think, is going to be better with that vertical. And kind of looking forward to seeing where that's going to go. But as Gordon said, it's been a great net. I have enjoyed it immensely. It's always great to be working with Gordon. That's a vacation. That's not a net. So that's awesome. I want to thank everybody that participated for tonight, and tell you that we're happy to hear from each and every one of you. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VoIP.southcars.com website. Your net control this session has been Gordon KY6V along with Gary KC2RMO, saying 73 in closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.